Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at thomisticinstitute.org.
First, a little bit about me. So we were talking about this a little at dinner, but I was raised, my dad was a Baptist pastor. And then by the time I was done with undergrad, I'm like, you know, I don't really think I'm Protestant anymore, probably, but I was also an American. So I believed in democracy, which means no Pope. So for that reason, I went to a Greek Orthodox church for a couple of years while I was getting my master's in philosophy. And by the end of that, I was like, you know, this Catholic thing, actually, I think it might be true. So I became Catholic. That was about a decade ago. And now I'm a professor at Ohio State. A couple of more personal notes. So my wife and I got married. We were a COVID couple. You can see her here. She's very tiny. Here's a larger picture of her, but she is also a professor at Ohio State. So we're very glad to be there. We have two miniature dachshunds. I brought one into the marriage, Bella. And then my wife liked her so much that we needed to get another. We say that Mochi, she was designed in a lab for cuteness. But at this point, you might be starting to get a little bit worried, right? So Pope Francis had some things to say about people who raise primarily dogs instead of children, right? So he says, today we see a form of selfishness. We see that some people do not want to have a child, but they have dogs and cats that take the place of children. So to assure you that I'm not one of these people, here's a picture of my baby. So this is Judah. He's over a year now. This is when he was a little bit smaller, his first Halloween. But yeah, Judah's 1.5 years old now, and so we're very blessed to be parents. Okay. So you probably heard of Thomas Aquinas. The important thing to know is that he is a doctor of the church. So declared a doctor of the church in 1567. And this is doctor in kind of like a PhD sense, right? So a doctor in terms of understanding philosophy, understanding theology. I don't know, you might have seen this meme before, so I'll read it to you. Is there a doctor here? I'm a doctor. What's going on? He's having a heart attack. And then the guy says, I'm a doctor in philosophy. And then she says, he's going to die. And then he says, we're all going to die. So he's that kind of doctor, right? So this is the kind of doctor we're thinking of. And Aquinas thought that happiness is key to a good life. So the title of the lecture, I want to live a good life. Where do I start? The main thing you should be thinking about is happiness. All right, so just a brief overview of what we're going to be doing, right? So we're going to talk about happiness and the good life, obviously. We're going to talk about what happiness isn't and what happiness is. So it'll actually be just a long list of things that isn't until we get to the thing it is. But I think most importantly for our purposes, along the way, I'm going to be talking about some mistakes that we can make when trying to live a good life, right? So by thinking about what is happiness, this can kind of clarify, like, what is the good life? What is it not? When are we making these sort of mistakes that will lead us away from living a good life? Okay, so now, like I said, Aquinas said that the good life is about happiness, right? So to live a good life, you want to live a happy life. But in some ways, this isn't very helpful. Why is it unhelpful? Well, I mean, it's like kind of obvious, right? So if you didn't know that a good life is like, you know, being happy, like, I don't know what to tell you, right? Like, that's something you kind of should have known. Someone should have let you in on that, right? I mean, just even in the Declaration of Independence, right? You know, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, all that. Like, if you haven't heard that, like, I'm sorry, like, you're going to have to go back to fourth grade. Okay. So it's kind of unhelpful in that it's like kind of obvious, right? Like, good life's about happiness. Like, yay, everyone knows that. Okay. But it's also unhelpful in that it doesn't really like solve the problem. It doesn't like tell us how to be happy, right? So in the 1960s, we have the Rolling Stones, their song, I Can't Get No Satisfaction, right? So they know they want to be happy, but they just can't figure out how. And maybe you think this is just like a 1960s problem, but I can guarantee you it's a now problem. There's a new documentary called The Definition of Happiness. And yeah, they're trying to figure out like, what does it even mean to be happy? So Not just a 1960s problem, also kind of now problem. And so we're going to turn to Aquinas to see what he thinks happiness is. Okay, so one thing to say is that our term happiness might mean something slightly different than what Aquinas means. So Aquinas, he's using Latin terms, so he uses the words beatitudo and felicitas typically when he's talking about happiness. And he doesn't mean, so like, we kind of think of happiness as this like pleasurable psychological state. So what does it mean to be happy? It means like I'm kind of like feeling great, you know, it's like this feeling, and like when I'm feeling great, then I'm happy. And this is not exactly what Aquinas is thinking. He's thinking more something like, so here's a picture of Aristotle. He's thinking something more like Aristotle's term eudaimonia, which the term eudaimonia is probably best translated as like flourishing. So if you think about the kind of life Aquinas is thinking of, he's like, what does it mean to live a flourishing life? Like, what does it mean to live this flourishing, thriving life? And not just one where you have these kind of like pleasant internal emotions. So that's the first thing to point out, is that Aquinas isn't just like, okay, what gives us pleasant internal emotions? He's thinking, what does it look like to live a flourishing, thriving life? And if you wonder what's the difference, well, we can point out like cases where there's a difference, right? So you think about like a drug addict, like when they're high, right? Well, when a drug addict's high, they probably have like a lot of feelings of happiness, kind of like even euphoria, right? But we wouldn't say the drug addict is like flourishing or thriving in life, right? We wouldn't say that that's the kind of life we're like talking about when we're talking about Aquinas on the good life. Instead, we're asking, what does it take to like flourish and thrive in life? And not like, what does it take to feel happy in the moment? So Aquinas is interested in how we flourish and not just how we feel good in the moment. So what he does, so this is called Aquinas' Treatise on Happiness. He looks at several things and asks if this is what happiness looks like, or this is what flourishing looks like. And he often answers no. So we're going to look at a lot of things that he says no to. But the important thing to notice is like why he says no, like why these things can't be identical to happiness or identical to living a flourishing, thriving life. Okay, so the first one, pleasure. Obviously, like, pleasure is not going to equal flourishing because of what we just talked about, right? You could have this, like, pleasant internal state, but that doesn't mean you're living a flourishing, thriving life. So what is this going to reveal, like, in a deeper way, right? So you might think maybe if you experience continuous pleasure, you would then be flourishing. And that isn't quite right. So why are they not the same? Aquinas says this. So he says that when we're living a good life, we kind of have pleasure as like a byproduct. So, you know, you're pursuing good things, you're living a good life, and then this pleasure kind of like happens to you, right? It's not like you seek it out directly. Instead, pleasure is kind of a byproduct of pursuing the good. So let's think about an example, right? So say you have some kind of sadistic person. They get a lot of pleasure out of harming others, right? So there have been people like this that have existed. And we wouldn't say that, like, the person who gets a lot of pleasure out of hurting others, like, that person is living a flourishing, thriving life. There's something deeply messed up about them, right? And so what we should want is we should want pleasure to be the byproduct of pursuing good things. If we have pleasure at pursuing the wrong things, then there's something going wrong with us, right? That's not what living a flourishing life looks like. So we want our pleasure to be the byproduct of good things. Okay, so there's also this philosophical thought experiment called the experience machine. And the basic idea goes something like this. Say there was this machine, it was like a kind of a virtual reality simulator. Once you hook yourself up to it, you experience like everything you'd ever want to experience, right? So, you know, you picture yourself, you know, graduating college, maybe you go on to your dream job, like have a family, all of these things. Like, the virtual reality simulator guarantees that it happens. It can like look into your psyche and like realize like, oh, this is what they actually want to experience. And then it'll let you have those experiences. And so then the question becomes, okay, does it look like a flourishing life to plug in to the experience machine? Is that what someone should do to live a flourishing, thriving life? And a lot of people have thought the answer is no. And it seems like the reason is because, well, that pleasure isn't actually a byproduct of something good, like you accomplishing those things, like you graduating from college, getting your dream job, having a family. Instead, that pleasure is just like, it's like fake, right? It's like not even a real experience that you're having. And so this seems to kind of confirm Aquinas' thought that we want pleasure that's a byproduct of good things. We don't want pleasure that's connected to either fake things or harmful things. Okay, so here we can get to our first mistake when we're trying to live a good life. So mistake number one, pursuing pleasure directly is not the path to a good life. So you might think, you know, on like a given Sunday, right? Like, oh, like what would be most pleasurable right now? Like sleeping in, right? But actually, like, what's best for you, what's good is to, you know, get up and go to Mass. Okay, so instead of, like, you know, having pleasures that connect to the wrong thing, we want our pleasures to start connect to the right things. So we don't want to pursue pleasure for its own sake. We want pleasure to start to naturally occur when we're pursuing the right things. Now, think of me, a dad, who was raised with a smartphone. And I'm like, you know, I like the internet, right? And up until this point, I can look at the internet whenever I want to. But now I have an 18-month-old and he wants me to look at him and not the internet, right? So, and up to this point, I've kind of trained myself like, oh, I like to look at my phone, like text on my friends, you know, like check social media. And so that's what I get pleasure from, right? And so at first, it might not be as pleasurable for me to play with him as it is to look at social media, right? But we can kind of see what Aquinas's diagnosis would be, right? Like, I'm getting pleasure from, like, the wrong things, right? I'm getting pleasure from the thing that's not actually my priority right now. So what should I do? Well, I can, like, do things that kind of help with this, right? So, you know, if I'm thinking, okay, like, actually flourishing's a drag, I hate it, I don't want to be involved with your, like, flourishing thing, like, I can do things to try and, like, get myself to feel pleasure at the right things. So Aquinas, he actually thinks that the good life has, like, a lot of pleasure. So he thinks that whatever it is that happiness and flourishing is, it's completely satisfying. It will completely satisfy us. We won't have any other desires for anything else. So he's not against pleasure. He just wants us to have pleasure at the right things. So if I'm the parent who's having trouble scrolling social media, right, then I can train myself to love what's good, right? So one thing I can do, you know, I really liked building Legos as a kid, right? And so now my son Judah, he likes Legos. And so, you know, we can build Legos together. And this can be a way of me being like, okay, how can I, like, retrain my pleasures so that they're connected to the right things? And so, you know, I can do whatever it takes to make, like, my phone less pleasing to me. I can put it on grayscale. I can delete all my social media apps, right? I need to retrain my pleasures so they're connected to the right thing. You could also think of Lent this way, actually. So what are we doing during Lent when we fast? Well, we're taking some time to remember what's most important. But you could also think it as a way of, like, training your pleasures. So you could be like, well, you know, like, I'm not going to get on social media during Lent. I'm not going to do this other thing that I find pleasurable during Lent. Not because, like, those things are bad necessarily, but because you want to, like, kind of, like, make yourself feel pleasure at the right things, right? So you want to, like, renew your focus on God, renew your focus on the Eucharist, and get pleasure from the things that are actually the most good and not these lower pleasures that sometimes captivate us. Okay, so that's Aquinas' first thing. He's like, is flourishing pleasure? He's like, no, but it should be a byproduct of flourishing. Okay, so a second option is flourishing, like, having a lot of wealth, right? So you might think, like, once you amass just, like, a ton of wealth, then you would be happy and you would live, like, a happy life. I have some bad news for you. So there's this really, really rich guy. I don't know if you've heard of him. His name's John D. Rockefeller. There's one point where he was the richest guy on the earth. I don't know who the richest guy is now, like, you know, but this guy was the richest guy. And they asked the richest guy, they're like, okay, you're the richest guy. Like, how much money would it take to make you happy? And he said, just a little bit more. He was the richest guy. There was no one richer. He could buy anything he wanted. And the answer was just a little bit more, right? So it seems like, okay, well, this doesn't fit Aquinas' criteria, right? It's not completely satisfying. It still leaves you desiring more. Now, what are the deeper kind of philosophical reasons why this is so? So Aquinas says this. He says, money is not the same as happiness because money is what you would call an instrumental good. What's an instrumental good? Well, it's a good thing that you use to get other good things. So what is money for? Well, it's to, you know, buy food, buy housing, support your family. It's meant to help you do these other things, right? So, like, if you just had stacks and stacks of money, but you didn't, like, actually need anything, it wouldn't do you much good, right? Because it's this instrumental good that's good for getting other things. So Aquinas says, like, look, whatever flourishing is, like, it should be about something that is intrinsically good. What are some things that are intrinsically good? Well, some things that are good in themselves include loving relationships, right? So if someone asks you, oh, like, why do you want to spend time with your wife? It's not so I can, like, get something else, right? I'm not like, oh, I'm spending my time with my wife so I can, like, get food later. It's like, oh, that's a weird answer. you know, it's like you're not spending time with your wife so that she'll make you dinner later, right? It's just because like it's intrinsically good. Like it's good in itself. You don't need any other answer. The same is true of like knowledge and beauty. If you saw someone like reading like a physics textbook, okay, first of all, they're kind of weird. But second of all, it's not like confusing why they would want to do that. They're like, I just love to understand this. Like this is just like something, you know, learning about the world, like, you know, and the same goes for, you know, philosophy and theology and any other topic, right? Like it makes sense that knowledge is just something we want because it's good in itself. Now it might give you other things, right? Maybe it can help you like produce new technologies or something. But at the same time, we enjoy it just because it's good in itself. And beauty is the same way. Okay, so Aquinas says wealth, no, that's not flourishing because it's something that you want for something else. Okay, so mistake number two in our kind of like, you know, how do I live a good life? You don't want to confuse instrumental goods for like final goods, right? So this happens with wealth all the time, right? So you think of the workaholic who's like, oh, like just a little bit more money and then I'll be happy. But they're, while they're at work, like earning the money, they're missing all the things that like actually make life good, right? They're missing time with their family, which they deeply regret later. They're missing like investing in their faith and like figuring out how to align their will to God's, right? So they're missing out on all these things that are actually good just so they can get this thing that won't be any good to them in the end because it's just an instrumental good. So that's a mistake that people can make, right? So, you know, I have here someone who neglects their family or the billionaire who hasn't thought twice about their soul, right? So you get this with the parable of the rich man, right? He stores up all this wealth, all of this food, right? And then at the end of the day, he dies, you know, before he can enjoy it, right? So there are these things that are deeply good in and of themselves. And those are the things that we should ultimately be focusing on, not getting distracted by other things like wealth. All right, so what about fame? So let's say you get a million followers on social media, and then you think like, you know, like, wow, like all these people interested in my life, like, you know, I just like post something and I get like 500,000 likes immediately. Like surely then I'd be happy. I also have bad news about this. So Jim Carrey, he's kind of, you know, he's kind of entered a weird phase. So Jim Carrey, he at one point said that he's only going to take like roles in movies that he like really cares about, that he thinks are like really worthwhile. And then the immediate next thing he did, his next project, was he was Mr. Robotnik in Sonic. So he's in a weird place, but he had this to say. So he said, I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed so that they can see that it's not the answer. So he's rich, he's famous, right? All these people paying attention to what he does. I know he acted in Mr. Robotnik after saying this weird thing about wanting to do meaningful projects, right? But he doesn't feel like completely satisfied, right? And so this doesn't fit Aquinas' criteria. Aquinas thinks that, you know, flourishing, thriving, like this will leave us with nothing else to desire. All right, so what's the problem here? Well, why is fame not the same as happiness? Aquinas thinks that that's because fame, it can be connected to good things, but it might not necessarily be. So we could imagine, you know, someone who gets famous for kind of like all the wrong reasons, right? So they're famous because they, you know, like punch someone on the face on social media or something, or they're famous because they, you know, are a serial killer or something like that, right? You can get famous for all the wrong reasons, right? So a person who's like flourishing and thriving, they might be famous, but oftentimes they're not. So it doesn't look like fame is necessarily going to be connected to living a flourishing, thriving life. Now, what's the kind of mistake we can learn from? Well, the mistake is that we don't want to think that what's popular is just going to be like what allows us to live a flourishing, thriving life, right? So what's popular, you know, it might be good for living a flourishing, thriving life, right? Like having enough money to eat, like that's popular. And that's part of living a flourishing, thriving life. But we also don't want to see like just what others do and then make like us think, okay, that's what I should do as well, right? Probably the most, I think, common thing at this stage of life is just thinking that like the career choices you make should be the career choices that others think are good career choices, right? And not just career choices, but also the vocational choices, right? So there'll be a lot of people around you like discerning like, okay, like what do I want to do? And, you know, some people will be driven like purely by wealth, right? And we've talked about why that might not be such a good idea. Now, if like you're reflecting on your vocation and, you know, it does end up that God's calling you to earn a lot of money and to support charities and all that kind of thing, then that can be something very good, right? But oftentimes, like what everyone else is drawn to is not necessarily a good guide for what God is drawing you to, right? So we want to think like, okay, it's not necessarily what's popular that is going to lead to my flourishing and thriving, but where I can most align my will with God's. So, you know, getting the approval of others, this can lead us to neglect the kind of person we're becoming and the thing that God's calling us to. All right, so Aquinas is considered a few things: pleasure, wealth, fame. He also considers health, which is like a better one. It's a better one because it's like actually intrinsically good, right? Like no one's going to be confused if you're like trying to get more healthy, like that's like for something else, right? And Aquinas calls this one of the goods of the body. So this is one that he thinks is more plausible. And it's also more plausible because let's think for a second about like a flourishing plant. So what does a flourishing plant look like? A flourishing, thriving plant? Well, it's probably just like a healthy one, right? You know, it's like a flourishing, thriving plant is one that grows and does all the plant things. You know, it's like, I don't know, I learned these terms in fifth grade, but the chlorophyll is doing the photosynthesis, right? You know, I know all about that. Okay, so that's what a flourishing plant is going to look like. It's going to look like one that's healthy. Now, Aquinas doesn't think that health is ultimately like what it requires for us to flourish and thrive. And his reason for this is that even though that might be true of plants, it's not true of us because we're part body and we're part soul. So he thinks that whatever it is that helps us flourish and thrive, it's going to be something that fulfills our entire person, not just our body. So if you're thinking about the goods of the body, he's like, these are kind of part of the equation, but they're not like the whole story. And so you might think of examples. So if you're, you know, prioritizing sports, looks, health at the expense of other goods of the soul, something might be going wrong. I don't know if you guys have heard of this guy. His name is Brian Johnson. He's like this kind of like live forever sort of guy. But anyways, he got fabulously wealthy doing tech, but he also got fabulously unhealthy doing tech. And so he used the fabulous wealth to then get fabulously healthy. And so now like he kind of like does like, I don't know, like he takes blood samples every morning and like tracks all of his biomarkers and all this kind of thing. And he says some like kind of hyperbolic things about living forever. Sometimes you wonder if he actually believes it. But his whole thing is like to get like maximally like fully healthy. But he's like extremely regimented. So his like morning routine, it like starts at like 5 a.m. and lasts till like 10 a.m. All these different things. Like it includes like workout and sauna. And I think there's like a hyperbaric oxygen chamber in there somewhere. I know too much about him. I'm sorry. Okay. But in any case, because now I'm a dad and I'm like, oh, I got to live a long time. So in any case, he gets enough sleep though. He goes to bed at 8 p.m. just like I do. Okay. So this guy, you might think like, oh, that's like great. You know, he's like flourishing, thriving, as healthy as one could be. But you might also think there are parts of living a good life that are incompatible with being fabulously healthy, right? So if my kids wake up in the middle of the night, it's probably not, you know, the best for my health if I like go and like, you know, figure that out, right? Probably best for me to continue sleeping. Also, you know, it's probably not, you know, best for me to like, you know, if I'm doing my 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. routine to kind of take time out of that to like help them get up and eat breakfast in the morning, right? So it seems like there could be conflicts between being fabulously healthy and actually being flourishing and thriving in the right kind of way. So we don't just want to, you know, focus on the goods of the body at the expense of the goods of the soul. Now, you might not be worried about Brian Johnson. You might be like, oh, well, I don't really have that problem like he does. But you might have like other things in your life that could cause this problem, right? So the thing that comes most to mind, and it's because we've been thinking about this as parents a lot recently, so we've been seeing how much time people dedicate to travel sports. So I was talking to like my like uncle and like my cousins in like travel baseball, and it's like, oh yeah, we're gone like Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, and it's like they're like never at home like with just the family, and they frequently like miss church on the weekends because of it, right? And it's kind of like it's like taken over their entire life. And you know, like a lot of people who get into travel sports are like, okay, my kid's gonna make it big in college and whatever. I'm like, that's not a very good bet to make. But at the end of the day, like the ultimate problem is that it's taking so much away from these other goods, right? The like loving relationships you have with your family, you know, obviously your relationship with God. And so there are ways that, you know, sports and health and looks that can get in the way of these deeper goods of the soul. Okay, so we've eliminated a lot of things: pleasure, fame, wealth, health. And now let's turn to another one. So this is the most plausible we've talked about so far: virtue. Now, Aquinas is going to think of virtue, he's going to call these goods of the soul. So when he talks about goods of the body, that's like health. Goods of the soul, these are like virtues. So these are all kinds of different virtues, right? So these could be like moral virtues, like charity and honesty. They could be like intellectual virtues, and they could even be theological virtues, like faith, hope, and love. And Aquinas says, okay, so is a life of virtue, is that what it is to have a flourishing, thriving life? And as I said, this is the most plausible one so far. And this is even what Aristotle thought. So Aristotle thought living a life of virtue, that's what it is to live a flourishing, thriving life. And I don't know if you know much about Aquinas, but he's really big on Aristotle. So you're kind of like, oh, he's just going to say, we found it. Like, this is it. Like, let's stop here. But he doesn't actually say that. He says that a life of virtue is not identical with flourishing. And the reason he says this is because he's like, look, the virtues, there are these things that are kind of like internal to us. So, you know, you could like, you know, have all these virtues. You could have faith, hope, and love. But what's going on with the virtues is that they go well when they're directed towards something outside of us. So if you think of the intellectual virtues, they're going well when they're directed towards like truth, right? And you think of like these moral virtues, and they're going well when they're, you know, directed towards these relationships with other people. And so Aquinas is like, whatever it is that is a like a flourishing, thriving life, it includes the virtues, but it's something outside of us. It's not just like, oh, like you're this perfect person now, and so like you're flourishing and thriving. You have to possess this thing outside of you. And so this is how he tells the story. So happiness is going to be found by aiming at something outside of ourselves. And so one mistake we might make here is thinking that happiness is something about like merely a journey inward, right? So you might have hear this kind of language sometimes, like being true to yourself or like finding yourself or this kind of thing. There's this book called Search Inside Yourself, and it says the unexpected path to achieving success, happiness, and something else. I've never read this book, so it could be fine, right? Like, you know, like titles can be misleading. But I think it captures this really like common like way of thinking that like, oh, the way to be happy is to like do this kind of inward journey to find yourself, like this sort of thing. And there might be an aspect of that, which is all well and good, right? Because like in order to find how God is calling us, oftentimes we do have to look inward, right? We have to like pray, and we have to see how God's directing us. And we have to see what kinds of gifts and passions God has given us to see like where he's directing us. But Aquinas says that it's not just about looking inward, it's about looking inward and so that we can understand our relationship to God. And so this is what he is going to say is ultimately flourishing and thriving, is having this particular union with God. So, you know, it's all going to end with God, yeah, surprise, surprise. But there's an interesting comparison with some of the other things we considered. So unlike wealth, God is going to be intrinsically good, right? So remember, wealth, we use it to get other things. We use money to buy food, to, you know, like buy shelter, to impress our future wives, these sorts of things, right? Use wealth to get things, right? And unlike wealth, God is intrinsically good, right? It's not like we like want God so that we can get other things. That can actually happen sometimes, and that's the wrong way to think about it, right? Sometimes we treat God as just something that will help us get other things. But Aquinas thinks that we want God because he's like intrinsically good. He's good in and of himself, just like other loving relationships are. Unlike fame, God is goodness itself, right? So we said that fame could be connected with being actually an awful person or being a good person, but sometimes an awful person. And God is goodness himself, right? And so he differs from fame in that way, that he has this like necessary connection to goodness. Unlike health, God fulfills our entire person, right? So both our souls and our bodies, right? So it's not just one aspect that we're worried about. And unlike virtue, God is something outside of us that we can aim at, right? So I don't want to be a good person just so I can like be a good person, right? I want to be a good person so I can have these great relationships with others, so I can help build an excellent community. Likewise, I want to have these theological virtues so I can have this particular kind of relationship with God. And so Aquinas thinks that this is kind of what's going to ultimately lead to flourishing and thriving. Now, you might have some questions, right? So the first question is, what exactly does it mean to like have union with God and be united to God? Like, because that's kind of like a pretty abstract like kind of thing. There are kind of two ways of thinking about this. So Aquinas thinks about it in a very intellectual way. So he emphasizes like knowing and perceiving God, saying that in heaven we're going to like perceive God in the beatific vision. So it's kind of like, you know, like viewing something beautiful, right? And like coming to understanding of like the world in a particular way. So he thinks about it in this kind of intellectual way. There's this other way of thinking about it, though, that's kind of like relational, right? So we have this relationship with God in prayer. We have this relationship with God when we get our will kind of in line with his, right? And so there's this like kind of understanding God. There's this kind of like relationship to God. These all kind of go into the mix with being in union with God. Now, I have one other question, though. So Aquinas said earlier that he thinks that whatever it is that thriving, flourishing is, like, it should be completely satisfying, that it shouldn't leave us desiring anything else. And I don't know about y'all's experience in your spiritual life, but sometimes that's not the way I experience God, right? So maybe, you know, you've been praying before, maybe you've been at a really long mass, and it doesn't feel like, oh, like, I don't desire anything else ever again, right? Like, this is completely satisfying. No desire ever extinguished. So I'm kind of wondering about this, like, oh, like, would this relationship with God be, like, completely satisfying? I think there are a couple things to think about here. So, one, this is an experience we can fully understand in this life. Only in the afterlife does Aquinas think this is possible. But we still might wonder, like, okay, well, what evidence do we have for thinking, like, you know, this union with God thing is really so great, you know? It's like, you know, when I am faced with social media or spending 10 minutes in prayer, I mean, already social media seems like much, much better. So, you know, like, how is that going to work? And I think for this, we can kind of look to the lives of the saints, because they're probably the ones that have most closely experienced that in this life. So if we look to Augustine, right? So he has his famous Confessions, and he has this line in the Confessions where he says, "Thou hast made us for thyself, and our hearts are restless till they rest in thee." So what's kind of going on here? This is a famous line. And basically, it's kind of this summary of his journey, right? He was looking for fulfillment in a lot of places, in sexual pleasure, in like mistaken religions, in ambition and power. And he couldn't find it. Like, he was unsatisfied with all these things, right? But he found a certain satisfaction and rest and peace, like in union with God. And I would definitely say, like, in, you know, my life as well, this has been true, right? So I start out thinking, oh, there are all these things I want. You know, I want this awesome job, you know, these kind of things. And the only thing that's really, like, been like, okay, like, I can rest now. Like, I have this peace, is just knowing, like, I'm exactly where God wants me to be in life, right? There'd be times where, like, I couldn't necessarily like look too hard at myself, right? Because I was out of step with that. Like, if I had to really think about it, I'd be like, oh, like, God wants me to do this, and I'm not interested right now. And like, there's a certain kind of restlessness that comes with that. And so I kind of know what Augustine is talking about here. Now let's move on to some people that I don't know at all what they're talking about. So here's Catherine of Siena. So she writes this Dialogue of Divine Providence. It's a description of a mystical experience. And she says, this is like a third person, you know, she was filled to bursting in the supreme eternal magnificence, and so transformed in the abyss of his supreme and immeasurable providence, that though she was in the vessel of her body, it seemed as if the fire of charity within her had taken over and wrapped her outside her body. Like I said, I can kind of identify with the Augustine thing. I don't know what this means. But like I said before, like, you might be wondering, is this union with God thing so great? And I think the place we should look for the evidence is maybe people who've experienced it to the greatest degree, right? So with the saints. So this is what Catherine of Siena says. You might also be familiar with this famous statue, sculpture, the Ecstasy of St. Teresa. So she has this part of her diaries where she talks about seeing this particular vision. And there was an angel that pierced her heart with, I guess, like an arrow or a spear or something. And this is how she described this experience. So, when he drew it out, he left me completely afire with a great love for God. The pain was so sharp that it made me utter several moans, and so excessive was the sweetness caused me by this intense pain that one can never wish to lose it, nor will one's soul be content with anything less than God. Okay, I still have a lot of questions, right? So there's like a stabbing, and then there's like this intense pain, and then she's like, oh, and then there's this sweetness that I could never be satisfied with anything else except God. Okay, I don't understand this either, but again, I think it's kind of this, you know, like thought about like, okay, where should we look for this? Like, will this union with God thing be actually satisfying? People that have been most likely to experience it, right? And so in the lives of the saints. So I think these are some interesting clues as to what that kind of experience might be like. All right, so we started out talking about we want happiness in order to live a good life. We talked about what happiness isn't, all these different things, and then what happiness is according to Aquinas, and some mistakes about the good life that we can then avoid because we understand happiness better. Now, if you want to learn more, there are some particular resources. So as you learned at the beginning, I'm the kind of lead editor of this philosophy teaching library. So there's this article, The Key to Happiness. It kind of goes through all the steps we talked about, plus more. It's hard to fit a lot into, you know, 1 hour talk, but it goes through all these steps. So you can read about Aquinas and what he thinks about the good life. There are a couple more academic things. So there's a book, God and Happiness. This is a pretty short one. This is only about 60 or 70 pages. And then if you want to read Aquinas himself, there's the Treatise on Happiness. So the kind of philosophy teaching library thing, that's like a summary with some excerpts of the Treatise on Happiness. And then this is the full Treatise on Happiness by Aquinas. And if you think I'm really cool, then there's going to be actually a Summa reading group on the Treatise on Happiness. This goes from March 5th to March 26th, and it's going to be on Zoom on Thursdays at 7 p.m. So this is, you know, a nice advertisement for that. Really perfect timing. So if you want the link or you go to the TAL website, then you can find this as well. So those are some ways you can learn more, but also have some time for questions. So thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.